flux underway after yet another victory. Although we did have to wring hands momentarily, it is a win, and a win is a win is a win, as they say. I'm Jeff. There's Tom. This brought to you by our friends at Bill Curry Ford, as always. Hey, maybe you have your eye on a new Ford truck this holiday season. Maybe you want out of your lease. You say that's enough. Maybe you have a major repair, something along those lines. Reach out directly to Bill Curry Ford GM Sean Sullivan. He'll help you out with any of that stuff, and he'll help you out personally, which is a great thing. Swing on by the Bill Curry Ford lot, and you'll see the best of the best there just off of Dale Mabry Highway in Tampa. Huge Bucks fans of Bill Curry Ford, and they serve the community. It's what they're all about. Bucks players and coaches are customers, including Villavea and Ali Marpet. Boy, when Ali Marpet's in the game, you notice, right? Because he can really pull and open things up. You saw the long touchdown run, partly due to Ali Marpet. Anyhow, Bill Curry Ford, nationwide lifetime warranty on new and used vehicles. And remember, GM Sean Sullivan will help you personally. Ask for the Joe Bucks fan discount, BillCurryFord.com. Well, Tom, I could lament the Bucks not putting together a complete game. They frequently don't. Or I could just celebrate another win against a very desperate Buffalo team. And I think I'll do the latter. I think I'll celebrate the win. I could nitpick. And, you know, Brady talked about it after the game. Arians talked about it after the game. And it's happened a lot this year. Now, the numbers are staggering, so I'm not going to tell you that Tom Brady hasn't played well. But he goes through stretches where he just misses wide-open throws. And I find that so odd. That only has to be the byproduct of age, right? That can't be – because he's so good the vast majority of the time that when he misses, A, you're surprised. But when he misses, Tom, he tends to miss – wide open guys. It's really strange.
Yeah, I think, you know, if I was looking for a reason, I'd you could look outside the box. It's either age, it's not aptitude, or injury. Remember last year he had the meniscus and nobody talked about it. Nobody really knew about it until the season was over, the extent to which he was hurt. You just don't see him miss open throws. Like, you know, if he's going to make mistakes and throw into coverage multiple times in a game, then I would have a more serious discussion. And there was one in the red zone that was a close call. That was a close call on a slant in the red zone. But other than that, I mean, you know, he still makes decisions at light speed. Tony Romo always does a good job of diagnosing and showing you exactly what Brady's brain is going through to come to the conclusion that he comes to, whether it's through pre-snap motion to give indicators, where his eyes are to manipulate safeties, how he gets from read one to read four on certain throws, like the touchdown throw, the walk-off to Perryman, where it's actually a drag route. They're running a mesh or whatever they're trying to do to create a run for Evans, and he sees it's double. So he comes off of Evans, and he finds Perryman, who's not supposed to be the read there, but he makes the throw, puts it in the right position for Perryman to catch and run and walk it off and win the game right then and right there. So there's so many things that he's really, really sharp about that you're right, it's hard to nitpick about it, and I'm looking to the outside of the box. It could be age. You know, maybe his hand talent doesn't always, I don't know. Last year we saw a lot of misses, and I said this last week on the Scuttle, there were a lot of misses that were just straight airmailed out of bounds where you go, what in the world was that, Tom? But you don't see last year what you see this year, which is open guys.
Well, and he also fires when he misses now, he misses in the ground.
Yeah, I like that better. You want to miss low than miss high. But
agreed.
Yeah, the thing about this year is he is missing some open players. But, I mean, I can't harp on that and make that the full takeaway of this game when you have a throw like the back corner of the end zone to Mike Evans on a third down that's absurd because that's down to the inch. Or after he misses Godwin on a third down throw where, again, it's a low miss, he comes right back and hits Evans on a square into the right. So, you know, for me, it's more good than it is bad, and this is a perfect...
A lot more good. I don't want to imply that I think he's playing poorly. It's just weird to watch him miss throws in a game. They could have blown the Bills out, and if he makes a few throws in the second half, it's a whitewash. But because he doesn't, they get back in the game.
Yeah.
That and the fact that the Bucs in the second half of games in which they have leads, for whatever reason, cannot stop the run.
Well,
and it's not the first time this year.
I think in this instance, this was a game where because you have such a big lead, they're willing to give that up. But then they give it up over and over again, and they're really good at the Bills at scheming up Josh Allen runs, that, and he's exceptional at that himself, that it's just you're willing to do that because you figure offensively you're going to rack up a few first downs and some points here and there that it won't matter. That's going to take way too much time off of the clock. But as it happens, you don't make those offensive plays. The Bills get the extra possessions. And the key sequence was in the fourth quarter, where in the span of about two or three football minutes, there's 14 points on the board for the Bills. And that's what changes this thing and makes it so close. But overall, this is a great win for a lot of reasons. Number one, there's a lot of crap to clean up for the next few weeks that it should help you stay motivated and stay locked in, even though the film of the opponent isn't going to do that on its own. Consider that the Bucs are going to be facing Taysom Hill and some variety of Cam Newton and P.J. Walker in the coming weeks. Well, they just got roasted enough in the quarterback run game. That film is going to burn in their brains. They're going to be embarrassed. They're going to be embarrassed when they show up on Tuesday and Wednesday and they go through those things and break down the breakdowns. So they should be more than prepared for the quarterback run this weekend against the Saints with a chance to clinch the division, and then the two matchups against the Panthers towards the end of the season as well. I mean, when you get burned like that, if I'm a Saints fan or a Panthers fan who are clinging to hopes, maybe delusions about a wild card berth, I'd say, oh, man, we're not going to surprise them now.
Well, yeah, and I agree with you that when you're up by multiple scores, these things can happen, and you're less worried about it because in two of the instances, it is the quarterback running. But remember, Indianapolis ran the ball down the Bucs' throat in the second half of that football game as well, after totally getting stoned in the first half. So the Bucs in the second half, and teams decide to spread them out, and they run the ball out of those packages, which is really interesting. So, yes, it's something to utilize and to learn from, and Coach Bowles will have to look at it and talk to his team about it. We now know that, you know, Philadelphia and now the Bills yesterday, and I just mentioned Indianapolis, all those teams in the second half said, well, screw it. We can't run when the Bucs know we're going to run. We can't run if they're in their base. We can run if we put them in and we give a pass look and then we run the quarterback, or we just run, period. That seems to be working. And you're right. Maybe the thought in Tampa has been, well, if you want to do that, all right, good luck. I mean, you're going to run out of game time. Well, they don't. They aren't running out of game time.
Yeah, I think the other thing to look at, too, is the importance of Jordan Whitehead in stopping the run. Because in quite a few circumstances yesterday, you've got Adams in the whole one-on-one, can he make a play, and it's not even close. And I'm thinking to myself, and Edwards, too, you know, with the three-game suspension, to have 33 or 32 in run support out of the secondary, I think is a really big deal. And that's what we're learning in the stretch run. Now, is it critical that Jordan Whitehead is ready to go against the Saints this weekend? I don't think so. The game's in Tampa. We're going to score upper 20s, lower 30s, I would think, as always. That's just proven to be the trend this year, and it was. We needed overtime to do it yesterday, but it's the trend again yesterday against the Bills. But Jordan Whitehead is really important. He takes good angles, and he closes, and he tackles in those situations where we got exposed a little bit yesterday. And I know that I'm sure you were lamenting it. Carlton Davis makes a tackle early in the game, has to come out. He comes back in. But then Jamel Dean has been dealing with an illness, and that was interesting. I don't know if you caught that in the postgame presser from Bruce, where they said, so what exactly is it with Jamel? He's got an illness, and he goes, he just got a little foggy. So I don't know if that means that the concussion he suffered last week, the protocol was followed, but then there were symptoms that came back yesterday. That's a dicey deal, so you got to watch what 35 does the next couple of weeks.
Every week, Tom, every week. You've got to watch to see if somebody, in particular him, is coming out of the game, because, of course, that's exactly what has to happen in Tampa every week. Somebody in the secondary making a simple tackle is going to leave the game. It's very frustrating. I sound frustrated. It's not me attacking the player. It's just, Jesus Lord, man. Apparently, our destiny for the football season is to never get through a game where every member of the secondary somehow makes it out alive. It's insane.
I will trade it, though, for the fact that Ali Marpet only missed one game, and if we can get through the whole season with that offensive line. You mentioned Ali already in the live read, but I thought Donovan Smith a couple of times yesterday. The pancake he had on the Fournette touchdown run is really amazing, but there are two other plays where he gets 8 to 10 yards down the field, and he's hauling. I don't think he's lost any weight, but he's moving around like he's lost some weight. He's usually the subject of ire for Bucs fans. You know, typically offensive linemen in general are, but Donovan Smith is not. His approval rating isn't as high as Tristan Wirfs. I think it's fair to say that. But yesterday, he had an excellent game, I thought, especially in run blocking, and he was motoring as much as I've ever seen him motor.
So I would like to note, you and I last week on the Scuttlebucks talked in depth at the lack of production that they were getting from Rashad Perryman. And we wondered why there was an excess in snaps, in reps. I mean, the guy had amassed in a ton of snaps, all of grand total since he's come back with the Bucs, like three catches and phenomenal games. They really, it was a useless time to have him out on the field. But I do get, and Arians has talked about this, it's interesting. I do get why they want him to figure it out and he and Brady to work, because we don't know what's going to happen with Antonio Brown. A lot of dumbassery most days around Antonio Brown. That we do know that. That's pretty consistent in his life. But in addition, Perryman is huge. That's a big dude running that fast. And so I think they feel more comfortable with him than Scotty Miller. Scotty Miller is a healthy scratch in yesterday's game, Tom. They don't even care about having him out there. And it's fascinating to me. It's like, all right, well, Perryman flies, but he's too – I looked it up right after the game because I don't know what it – I don't know why I didn't know it, but I didn't really realize he's big as he is. When I – something about that play, it stood out to me. And also because it was a drag route, and I thought, okay, well – you'd like a guy who can handle some punishment if that's the case. And so then I went and looked, and he's like almost 220 pounds.
Yeah.
That's a big dude running that fat. That's why they want him. They want him to be able to figure this out.
Yeah. And looking at the snap count yesterday, he was in the 50s a couple weeks ago. But it's 26, I think, yesterday. Mm-hmm. I just lost it. I pulled it up. But it wasn't as robust, Perryman's presence yesterday, as it has been in the last couple of weeks. He had 26. Tyler Johnson, for the record, had 49 snaps in this football game to Perryman's 26. I think that even if Miller was quote-unquote a healthy scratch, he's clearly dealing with something, because it's not for a lack of chemistry with Tom Brady that he wouldn't make it out on the field. So I think that's got to be something where they're trying to get him up to 100%. But the theory about Breshad Perryman being our receiver and potential replacement for Antonio Brown if something goes haywire. I mean, again, when you see that breakaway speed on a simple throw, and that's something we're doing a hell of a lot more of this year. We talked about it last week on the Scuttlebucks, and Romo brought it up yesterday in the broadcast. The screen game, the underneath game, with the yards after catch, is becoming a more and more of a big piece of this offense. When you see that on a drag route from Perryman, okay, you've got another weapon that defenses have to consider, let alone the ability for him to lift the lid. Because once that motor gets going, we saw it in the finish of the season, Jameis last year, when he became the de facto number one wide receiver in the offense, the dude can pull away from people. It's like Evans. You know it's coming, but they still can get by you. And one side note before we – I know you got one more thing to say about Breshad at least. But this is the second week in a row I've been dogging the chemistry of Mike Evans and Tom Brady for a long time on this podcast. Last week, you saw a couple of huge third down catches in Atlanta on a 3rd and 8 and a 3rd and 7. Again, you saw it yesterday. The touchdown in the back of the end zone, that's a play that maybe five receivers can make in the NFL. But then there was another two or three catches that were drive extenders and or plus plays for Mike Evans. It looks like Brady trusts 13 in a way he hasn't, like, basically the entire time he's been there in Tampa. When he has to make a play, now Mike Evans, I think, is in that conversation, which is only good news for us offensively.
Yeah, I looked it up. You're right. Perryman had 26 snaps. Tyler Johnson had 49. If you go back to last week, it was very, very strange because Perryman had 59 snaps and Johnson had nine. Nine. So they're flip-flopping their roles to some degree. I'd love to be a fly on the wall to know why and what it is they're trying to do. I mean, it's every week. It's something different, which is fascinating. Now, one thing we brought up, we always bring up snap counts here just because we're trying to get a feel for where they're headed, what they're looking to try to accomplish with this offense as they get set for the playoffs. It's pretty clear, Tom. O.J. Howard is just hardly on the team.
I don't even think about him anymore. Yeah.
Well, I bring it up every week because I'm always curious. He had five snaps in the game. I don't remember him being in the game. I don't recall him being in the game, period. And that's every effing week these days. So he could start looking to put his house up for sale. We're going to call this a day with O.J. Howard, apparently. He's just of no use to him. Now, you happen to have the greatest tight end in the history of football come back and every week look dominant. That's helpful. And then Brady is reliable. So that's what we got. And that's fine.
Yeah, I was just looking at pulling up season stats too, not necessarily the advanced ones, but just talking about distribution of passes for Brady this year, because it's fun. Now that you're in the back half of the season, well, the final quarter of the season, really, Antonio Brown being out for extended period of time, he's only played the 5 games, and Gronk has played 8, which is 5 short of what we've done for the season. But just to look and see where the targets go. So Godwin is by far the leader in the clubhouse now for the Bucs. 120 targets this season. He already has 92 catches. I mean, the 15 a week ago helped, but he's already at 92 catches for the season. He broke 1,000 yards, heard Jim Nance say that live on the broadcast yesterday. But then Evans is next with 99 targets and 63 catches. Mm-hmm. He's going to break 1,000 yards again by the time we're done with, I would think, Carolina in 2 weeks, unless he goes for a buck 15 next week against New Orleans. Not typically something he does against the Saints. So within 2 weeks, you're going to have two receivers break over 1,000 yards. And then Gronk is fourth on the team in targets despite missing 5 football games. He's got 56 targets this season. He's going to be well over 700 yards before the season's over. Just to take a stock of where we are as far as production goes and distribution goes, you're going to have at least, buddy, I would think, 4, if not 5 receivers go over 500 yards this year in this offense. Probably 3 of them are going to be well over 750 yards. It's just prolific as hell.
Well, it's yeah, and it's something to enjoy. My brother, who listens to the Scuttlebucks, Aaron, up in New Hampshire, he's probably listening right now, and I thank him for that. He's funny because he reminds me in a lot of ways of another family member of mine, and that's my mom. And what I mean by that is they're both diehard Bucks fans cheering on the Bucks, and they get so mad when the Bucks make things more difficult on themselves and the hardships you saw in the second half of the game because Brady couldn't hit open receivers and all that frustration and a run defense for Tampa Bay. And then I'm always here to calm them down and talk them off the ledge and go, are you going to look back at the regular season when the Bucks go 14-3 and complain about the way it looked? Because in truth, the numbers are all there. The Bucks are prolific. The Bucks are prolific. They don't always make it look easy. It's the National Football League. The other guys are paid too. And in many cases, those guys are desperate. Those teams are not in the same position the Bucks are in. The Bucks are going to cruise to the division title. Worst case scenario at this point, if you go 14-3, I imagine you're a 2 seed. Mm-hmm. You could very well end up being the 1 seed and really host throughout. I don't know, man. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. I began the podcast by complaining about the second half a little bit with missed throws. Those are things we do have to look for because it has been consistent that Brady has these little spells where he misses wide open guys or else the Bucks run away with these games. At the same time, I'm not losing the forest for the trees. I get the fact that the Bucks are one of the best 3 or 4 teams in the National Football League. Again, the Bucs are the reigning Super Bowl champions. The Bucs are going to cruise to a division crown, not something we win a lot around here, so I'm not going to take it for granted. Even last year, winning the Super Bowl didn't mean that we won the division. We didn't. So you're about to pace the Saints again, and that'll be beautiful, and you get through that, and you move on, and, well, I say again, but you're about to take the division away and for good from the Saints for the prolonged future because they're in salary cap hell. So it's I don't know. I want to remind every Buck fan, including family members, that at if in fact they go 14-3 or they go 13-4, what are we really talking about here? We're talking about the greatest 2-year run in franchise history, already with a Super Bowl in the back pocket and a chance at a third, a second with Brady, a third overall. I mean, not bad for a franchise that was forever the laughingstock of football.
Yeah, well, offensively speaking, it's just you look at these numbers and it gets ridiculous. I'll stop it at the 16-game mark because I'll do like a baseball thing, right? You know, we're trying to regulate
apples to apples. Yeah.
So at the 16-game mark, the single season passing record is Peyton Manning from 2013. He threw for 5,477 yards. I don't think Brady's going to catch that. He's at 41-34 for the season. He'd have to go absolutely crazy in the next 3 weeks to break it in a 16-game plateau. But it's not crazy
to defend.
Exactly. But it's not crazy to think over the next 3 weeks that Brady's going to average 300 passing yards a game, right? Would you agree with that?
Okay. So he'll get to 5,000 yards if he does that.
You're going to have a 5,000-yard passer. Leonard Fournette is 222 yards away from being a 1,000-yard rusher. And you've got Mike, who's 115 away from 1,000 yards receiving. So you're going to have, through 16 games this year, a 1,000-yard rusher, a 5,000-yard passer, and 2,000-yard receivers. I mean, that's just – this is Tampa. This is not the Rams in the late 90s. This is not the Broncos with Peyton Manning. This is not the Colts with Peyton Manning. This is Tampa Bay. You're going to hit all of those plateaus, and you're going to be hosting at least one playoff game when it's all said and done after that, something they did not do last year except for the Super Bowl. So, yeah, I mean, we're checking off boxes now. Now it's about amassing stats and staying healthy. That's what the next four games are about.
It's the collection of toys. It's funny because, you know, when you assess leagues and another team, and I'm wearing the hat right now that you and I are both diehard fans of, and you do a podcast, and you've done a podcast in the past on the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, back-to-back Stanley Cup championships to go with the other Stanley Cup championship. At some point, when you look at the league, you're like, who are the most prolific franchises in the history of the sport? And we do the modern era, pre, you know, all that stuff, because it's unfair when you go back and watch somebody win six Stanley Cups out of 7 years or something like that. I got it, Montreal's records and all that stuff. But when, if you think about the modern era, you're looking at Chicago, you're looking at Detroit, you're looking at teams like that that had runs for the ages where they were dominant year in and year out. And now you have to, and the Penguins and some others, but now you have to say, the Tampa Bay Lightning belong in that discussion. That's who they are. You're amassing toys. You're amassing cachet. You're amassing historical relevance in a league where you ought not be. You were the newcomer. And the Bucks, you know, you go back to the way the Bucks were treated when the NFL expanded and how they didn't give them what they gave later on, the Carolina Panthers, right? This opportunity to pluck teams' best players away so that you had some semblance of a roster. We literally in Tampa Bay were rolling out dudes who hadn't played NFL football, maybe ever in some cases. In other cases, they'd played their last snap 5 years ago and they were selling cars. I mean, quite literally, that's true. That happened. The Bucs were having to put together this. So they were stamped, screwed from the beginning, and they became a laughingstock because of it. And then after a while, it's hard to kind of punch your way out of the weight of that, right? And people not wanting to come to a place with that reputation. Yep. So now that we're in this situation, if you're an old school Bucks fan and you know that history and you used to go over to Tampa Stadium, the big sombrero, as it were, the way that I did as a kid with my dad, and you would hear those visiting fans come into town and laugh about the franchise that the Bucks were, and they would walk in with a lot of bravado knowing they were going to win that day and that the Bucks at best, I remember when Leroy Selman was there, I felt so proud of the fact that I could say, well, at least the Bucks had the best player on the field. They didn't win the game, but they had the best player on the field. Now it's like, no, man, if we get a third Super Bowl, look around at all the franchises that don't have a Super Bowl or two or certainly not three. So, yes, gather the cachet and the toys and say, we deserve it. We were laughed at forever.
Yeah, and to circle back and play devil's advocate, which is the nitpicky guy, we're going to hit all those plateaus, 5,000, 1,000-yard rusher, 2,000-yard receivers, division title, 13-4, 14-3, we fully expect one or the other. And yet, we do feel like the offense has been a B or a B-plus most of the season.
Well, yeah, it can be better. It can be better.
Yeah, and I think both are right. You are right to celebrate the accomplishments. You are right to pinch yourself as a Buck fan and say, what world am I living in? Did I, skip over to a different universe? Because this is absurd. And then also, at the same time, say, when Bruce or Tom are critical about the offense not executing, they're absolutely right. It's not. It's not executing at that pinnacle that it needs to in order to be able to.
It doesn't have to be yet. It doesn't have to be right. We keep saying just be right when these playoffs start. Yep. That's all we care about. That's all we cared about last year. Could you? It was a race against time. Could you get right? Could you find something that as you entered the postseason, you could fall back on and believe in? And the answer became a resounding yes, they did. And the defense stepped it up to boot. But, you know, let's not forget, Tom, how exciting it is to watch every week that the fact they have a Leonard Fournette right now, who's just a beast, just a beast week in and week out.
Yeah, I will say, and this is where this will be my last picky thing, but sometimes he'll rear his head as somebody that tries to hit home runs instead of taking the single that's in front of him. And there was a growth moment. But the drive that we were coming out of our own end zone, essentially, it was like the 8-yard line, 7-yard line, on that first down run, he tries to bounce outside to the right. If he follows where the scheme is designing, which is, I believe, between the center and the left guard, it's 2nd and 6 instead of 2nd and 9. Maybe it's even more because he can truck a guy. And I thought that helped short-circuit the drive. Now, a Brady miss did us in as well, but I thought that helped short-circuit the drive. Next time out, he took the 4 yards. I think there was a message delivered in the sidelines. That's one place where Ronald Jones is better than Fournette because Ronald Jones can read the room and the situation, but there is no doubt, I mean, there's no denying, You know, Leonard Fournette is now responsible for 1,199 yards from scrimmage this season.
Oh, yeah.
He's an absolute monster.
Hey, Tom, he scores every week.
He does.
We do this thing. You and I are involved with this group, Prize Picks, and if you look at the Leonard Fournette number, it's either, you know, for most running backs, it's a half.
Yeah.
Like over or under a half, right? Unless you're like, you know, Dalvin Cook or something, right? And I always take the over with Fournette. I win every week. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's going to score.
Yeah. I played him yesterday because his rushing over-under was 55 and a half yards. And you look at what Buffalo was giving up on the ground week after week. Yeah. I mean, that felt like easy money. And he basically got it done with the first touchdown run. Because at that point, it was two carries, 50 yards. I was like, well, he's going to go over today. No problem.
I do the same with Gronk, by the way, on receptions and yards every week. I go over. I mean, nobody stops that guy.
Yeah.
They don't. He's just too good. So there's an abundance of riches, and we should appreciate it, I guess, is the bottom line. And the Bucs won a game ugly that they could have won walking away. It doesn't really matter. A win is a win is a win. We'd be in the podcast in the same way we began it, which is to celebrate another win. And if the Bucs go 14-3, if some of those were ugly, okay, so be it. I'll take it. And you know what? You should, too. Our thanks to Bill Curry Ford. Our thanks to Joe Bucs fan. For Tom Lang, I'm Jeff Cameron. Our thanks to all of you. We'll be with you again on Friday. Take care, everybody. Go Bucs.